Hello, and welcome once again to the Ottoman Blind Squirrel Dietz blogcast, which addresses the continuing question of Ottoman Blind Squirrel Dietz. In episode 5, we approach, apprehensively and wearing a hazmat suit and nitrile gloves, Dietz's song, Sometimes I Talk to Myself, an item that would, in most cultures and during most times, even if they were primordial, be categorized under the heading Toxic Abomination, along with large, quick creatures with fangs, claws, and a taste for red meat, singing sphincters, and Wednesday's tweets from the commander in chief. Warning! An illustrative link to a found fragment of the tune that is today's subject is attached to the accompanying text, which you will find, if you dare, on the Ottoman Blind Squirrel Dietz website or in the Dietz Bin of History at blindsquirrel.bandcamp.com. There is a thin line between brave and foolhardy. Know that if you follow the link, you have crossed that line. It's not easy to be an ethnomusicologist. Take this tune, for example, which, according to Dietz's voluminous and yet nearly illegible lists, is to be played first in his largely hypothetical set. First position in a musician's set is customarily the total, quote, shit kicker, close quote, the one that encourages folks who had trouble with traffic or parking or getting a sitter for the grandkids or getting out of the truck after that last joint to do better next time. It's the one that I am just now not going to share with you, and here's why. Consumer protection advocates have gotten into the music industry and thereby into the field of ethnomusicology, which may in this case be a good thing. I am told that no less an authority than Tipper Gore herself slapped the warning label on this one and spat on it for good measure afterward. The product warning label for this particular tune is as threatening as the seal on the tomb of King Tut. And in this case, it may not be overreach. There are some things that I cannot, in good conscience, subject my audience to without warning. Our editorial decisions have ethical and now legal implications. What and how much can we share? How much of the obscurity of one subject is deserved? How much could we be sued for? But on the other hand, is it possible that a piece challenges the foundation of our ideas of what constitutes the essence of music or of performance, like 4 minutes 33 seconds by John Cage? In support of this possibility, Dietz mentions in his notes that he once considered performing 4 minutes 33 seconds with a kazoo band, but also notes that his peers considered it to be, quote, putting clown shoes on the ineffable, whatever that means, close quote. There is also the plausible rumor that seems to have no interest in dying that Dietz, undaunted by the prevailing and highly critical winds, or perhaps simply plagued by the visionary spirit for which a judicious application of an antifungal ointment might have proved to be a more successful management strategy, chose instead to persuade his brothers, who were at that point in their storied careers willing to play under the assumed name of the Bleeding Hearts and Assholes Orchestra and Ladies' Aid Society, after having been promised, no doubt, with riches, chemical correctives, women, and snacks, to perform Cage's 4 minutes 33 seconds live on dog whistles, with an unwitting and inadvertently, or at least from his point of view, absent neighbor in the role of Max Yazger. As the dog whistle orchestra launched into the piece, dogs throughout the neighborhood began to howl, and some even approached the concert venue, getting as far as the neighbor's swimming pool around which the composition was being performed. It was at this point that several of the more astute audience patrons demanded that their tickets be refunded, arguing, and with what was soon acknowledged as impeccable logic, that whatever the orchestra was playing, it was not 4 minutes 33 seconds. By the time critical mass had accumulated, however, Dietz had gone missing, as had the evening's receipts, leaving the remaining brothers to make his excuses, precipitating yet another of their fraternal fallings out that persists into the current era. Dietz calls this piece his, quote, magnum opus, close quote. His high school transcript shows that he dropped out of Latin 1 before the end of the first semester, so we can take that assessment with a grain or perhaps a shaker of salt. But he seems to have worked on the tune for several years, and his notes say that he found composing the second verse to be particularly difficult, and mention that Herman and his hermits were hugely influential in helping him solve that challenge. While ethics, morality, and a profound respect for hubris and karma, not to mention court judgments, prohibit my mounting a public performance of the piece, I can at least describe elements of Sometimes I Talk to Myself for you, and probably without doing most of you any lasting harm. First, I must at this point remind